I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This regulation effectively acts as a total ban, complicating abortion access dramatically.
It's pretty clear their real goal is a full zero targeting of IVF, the rules against abortion for rape and incest survivors.
We're at a historic juncture with the Conservative Party facing what could be one of its most devastating electoral defeats.
It comes down to a misunderstanding of what it means and looks like to be a leader. I think people generally don't necessarily have a willingness to learn from lessons of those who have come before them.
An incumbent Labour government should do is to say, water, we're going to take that back into public ownership.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem.
The United Kingdom is a great country.
Never, never been a good bet to bet against America.
Hi, hello, welcome. This is Mid-Atlantic, the podcast where we test the political temperature on both sides of the pond. I'm your host, Royfield Brown, coming at you from the second city of the United Kingdom, Birmingham. In today's episode, we're tackling two major stories that are dominating headlines on both sides of the Atlantic. First, we'll delve into the heated debate surrounding Florida's new six-week abortion law, a rule that marks a dramatic shift in the landscape of reproductive rights and possibly the outcome of the November election. Then we'll turn our attention to the UK, where the latest YouGov poll projects a landslide victory for the Labour Party with an estimated 400 seats in the next general election. What implications could this monumental shift have for the political fabric of the UK? To dissect these topics, we are joined by a panel of guests. From the coastal town of Broadstairs in Kent, we have Leah Brown. From the heart of Lancashire in Burnley, we have Mike Holden to share his insights. Crossing over to the United States, we're joined by Ira Shapiro in Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. And we have a good friend of mine, a good friend of the podcast, Mike Donohue, from Los Angeles in California. Today, we're going to explore the ramifications of these significant political developments. First off, the contentious six-week abortion ban in Florida, a law that critics argue effectively acts as a total ban. This regulation imposes severe restrictions, including mandatory in-person doctor visits and the 24-hour waiting period, complicating abortion access dramatically. As political and social opposition mounts, we're going to look at the potential for change through an upcoming ballot measure aimed at protecting abortion rights.
A ruling on abortion could have a huge impact on the presidential election in Florida. Florida Supreme Court cleared the way for a new six-week abortion ban to take effect, but the court also put the issue on the ballot in November, letting voters decide if abortion rights should be enshrined in that state's constitution. Wei Zhejiang shows us now how the Biden campaign is already working to capitalize.
Nearly 1 year after Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a six-week abortion ban, the Florida Supreme Court ruled that it could take effect in less than 30 days, giving the Biden campaign what it considers to be an opening to flip votes in the Republican stronghold state because abortion rights will be on the November ballot.
I'm running to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again, so women have a federal guarantee to the right to choose. Donald Trump doesn't trust women. I do.
President Biden is banking on this new advertisement resonating with women, and his campaign is convinced reproductive freedom will drive the election across the country. According to a recent CBS News poll, 62% of women believe the overturning of Roe v. Wade was mostly bad for the country, which is why the new ad is running in all the battleground states, as well as Florida and North Carolina.
I'm going to start with you, Mr. Donahue. The practical impact of the six-week ban is considered by many as a de facto total abortion ban, as 6 weeks is often before many women realize they're even pregnant. What is the gestation of this law? And that pun was not at all intended. But give us the background of how we've ended up with this law on the statute books in Florida.
You take Florida, which has drifted rightward for the last 10, 15 years, accumulating in DeSantis' overwhelming victory a few years back. And honestly, this is just completely in line with the overall Republican desire to completely outlaw abortion across the land. I think they've seen, both in polling and in vote results, that if they come out and just say explicitly no, no abortions at all, they tend to lose pretty heavily at the polling booth. And so the 6 weeks is a somewhat compromise that some of the more moderates like Nikki Haley can agree to. But the problem is, we all know where it's going. We all know that 6 weeks is not going to be the end of it. All you have to do is look at the targeting of IVF, the rules against abortion for rape and incest survivors. So it's pretty clear their real goal is a full zero.
Let's come on to what might happen in the ballot box a little bit later. But Ira Shapiro, welcome to the show, sir. It's your second time on, but the first time on the panel show, and we're honored to have you. Ira, could you give us some kind of understanding of how the Supreme Court of Florida could overturn 35 years worth of precedent? Or are these judges fundamentally just placeholders by Governor Ron DeSantis, and that is the reason why many people are saying that women are going to lose the right to choose in Florida?
It's good to be with you and the other panelists on this important issue. Frankly, DeSantis has in Florida a very far right wing, they call themselves conservative, but I don't use that term for them, Supreme Court. Florida has the constitutional provision protecting the right to privacy. But the court quickly brushed that aside and said it doesn't apply to abortion. And the court found that the 15-week ban on abortion was unconstitutional, but didn't go far enough. And so they've upheld this six-week ban, which, as Mike Donahue said, represents pretty much an abolition and prevention of all abortions. The interesting thing that they did, which is somewhat of a surprise to me, while they were doing that on the one hand, they decided that indeed the voters of Florida could decide the issue in a referendum that will occur in November, which I give them credit for. They voted 4-3 to do that and left it basically up to the people of Florida. I think that what is striking politically for me, and I think for Mike Donahue, was the Republicans had been struggling a bit, Nikki Haley and even Donald Trump, to come up with some position on abortion that didn't seem like a prohibition. So they were throwing around the notion of a 15-week ban, which one could disagree with, but at least it sounds like something. And then DeSantis, while running for president, signed into law the 6-week ban, which was an extraordinarily stupid thing to do from the, unless you were cultivating or trying to cultivate the far right and the Christian right only to the exception of everyone else. Right now, we will see what the voters of Florida want to do. Florida has for a long time been the place in the South that other residents from other states had gone for abortions, and that's out of the question now, but it's still in the hands of the voters in November.
Thank you for that extremely detailed answer. I'm going to come to you, Leah. As Iris says, this is fundamentally going to be left to the voters in Florida come November to adjudicate as whether this law is going to stay on the statute books. Everywhere since Roe versus Wade was overturned a couple of years ago now, these ballot measures have been overwhelmingly rejected by the American people. Are we going to see the same in Florida? And also, why do you think that Americans, even in the reddest of red states, have always rejected outright bans on abortion?
I mean, I think it's a combination of both, to take your latter question first, of both what Mike and Ira have said. One of the challenges is the polarity of views. And obviously, the evangelical voters are perhaps as vocal as those who are biblical. But really, it's what Mike was saying about the exceptions and the carve-outs with respect to rights where a woman has been raped or where a woman has been subject to some kind of traumatic event that has led to her needing to visit a facility, whether that is actually for an abortion or any of their supplementary services. And I think that there do need to be protections for those situations. I think an outright ban is never going to fly, for lack of a better phrase. But this is, to Ira's point, an ideological war. This is about political posturing. This is about dictating what one portion of the population believe on a specific view and forcing that on everyone else, thereby removing the ability of the American public to choose. And that is inherently problematic in a democracy, because that is an erosion of rights, that is an erosion of freedom. And I think the main issue, bringing the woman's perspective here, is obviously that it is about the women. It's not about the politicians, it's not about the Supreme Court, it's not about what lawmakers in quiet rooms think, it's not about the presidential election campaign, it's not about what favors this does to Joe Biden. This is about women's rights to make decisions about their own bodies and to be able to have freedoms that they can exercise and to be able to make decisions for their own bodies in a way that they can live with psychologically for the rest of their lives, regardless of what you think about the subject itself. As soon as the issues are discussed in a way that it's not leaving the women who are affected by the 6-week ban or the 15-week ban from the equation, that is where the problems start. And I think it'd be really helpful if this narrative was removed from the broader conversation about is this or is this not going to result in a successful presidential campaign? And actually, what is really going on? And are the people who are affected by this being given a voice in this conversation? And are they going to turn out in the polls? I'm not sure I agree with Mike that all of America doesn't agree with the 6-week ban. But I also recognize that polling is a thing, and we do have a fairly good indication of how these bans have landed in other states and also how voting is likely to transpire in November.
Mr. Donohue, potentially the electoral landscape could change in Florida. Florida has been becoming a redder and redder state, but it's still purple-ish. Is this an opportunity for the Democrats in terms of potentially winning the state of Florida, which will massively help the Electoral College in November?
Yeah, I think it's a stretch. Florida really wasn't very close in the last election. I think Democrats are leveraging quote women's health issue across America, and Leah's absolutely right. It's definitely not everybody, but even in deep red Kansas, right, these propositions have failed. I think if anything, normally we talk about presidential coattails, right? You have a popular presidential candidate and the people on the ballot downstream benefit from his popularity. And this actually might be one of the cases of the reverse happening, where people go to the polls in order to vote on women's health and wind up voting for Biden. So it might be like a reverse, whatever reverse coattail is called. Yeah, no, I don't know that it'll change. I don't think any Democrat is really optimistic about switching Florida.
Since the Dobbs decision overruling Roe versus Wade, as Leah, Mike, and you have said, every time the issue has come up across the country in states blue and red, the outcome has been the same. Obviously, Americans are not united on it, but there is a very emphatic majority of Americans who believe that the decisions about women's health should be left to the women and whoever women consult with, whether it's husbands, boyfriends, girlfriends, doctors, family members, whatever. There is, I think, something fundamental here that drove the original Roe versus Wade decision. And that is the intersection of freedom and privacy. Deep down, Americans believe that they ought to have some zone of privacy for their most intimate personal decisions. It was almost 100 years ago, and I actually have this quote on my wall. Justice Brandeis was the founder of the concept of privacy, and he wrote, "It's the most fundamental of all things, the right to be left alone to make these fundamental decisions about your life." And every time the issue has come up, the outcome is the same. And Donald Trump actually is clever enough to know that he, having appointed the justices who produced the Dobbs decision, this is a very bad thing for him politically and the Republicans because of that fundamental commitment to privacy that a lot of people share.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I've always thought that this is fundamentally incompatible with a right-leaning sense of freedom. But Mr. Holden, you wanted to jump in.
I was going to ask a question and maybe a follow-up one. And one was about the makeup of the Florida Supreme Court, exclusively white men. As Leah said earlier on, it seems, from a British perspective, incredible that a bunch of white men can sit there and form a statewide remit that says this is how all women will be affected. And the timing of this referendum in November tracks me as basically involved as a very major point in the presidential election and see where Trump takes it.
So right now, the Florida Supreme Court is broken down, four men, three women. However, again, let's consider the makeup, the demographics of Florida. Obviously, there's a significant portion are elderly, and there's a significant portion of Hispanics, whether they're from Cuba or other places, Latin and South America. And those demographics tend to skew pro-life.
One of the fascinating things about the emergent campaign to get rid of this new law, Leah, is that it's garnered support from both Republicans and independents, with many Republican women actively participating in petition collection. Is there a concern, and some Florida Democrats have actually said this, is the concern legitimate that if Biden, in the run-up to November, over-politicizes this abortion ballot measure, that it could alienate some GOP voters who are essential to overturning the initiative?
That's a great question. I think it would be easy for Biden to over-politicize it, but I think his danger is actually the opposite, which is to not be reactive. And to be fair, I don't think that there's a huge amount that needs to be said here to support the direction of travel, but for the Republicans getting ahead of themselves in their own little contest, wouldn't have been a politicized issue at all in this way or in this time frame or in this state. But in terms of alienating voters, the specificity here is critical. And I think the question from a lawmaking perspective goes to Ira's original point and Mike's original point of, is the argument a six-week ban is trying to get down to zero, or are we going to end up with the middle ground and the voters don't accept that the six-week ban is the direction of travel for Florida? And therefore, I think it is really important for Biden to be really clear about where he does stand. And in terms of alienating voters, I think he needs to recognize that he knows his voter base. He knows what the GOP expects of him on this issue. And this is an opportunity effectively for him to get people to stand up and be counted. I'm not sure I agree that the risk is as significant as you suggest with your question.
I think Lee is completely right. As a Democrat and Biden supporter, I think Biden has many problems to deal with. But over-politicizing this issue isn't one of them. This is one of the clearest issues possible at the moment. And the reason that Vice President Harris is spending so much time touring on this issue, the reason Biden will be hitting this issue, is it's a very stark choice and one that the Republicans are emphatically on the wrong side of. Unlike immigration, which is difficult, unlike the Israel-Gaza war, which is extremely difficult for the country and for Biden. But this is not a difficult issue for him.
So only time will tell whether the women of Florida will have some level of autonomy over their bodies legally. And we have to look at the good citizens of Florida to do the right thing come November and the general election in overturning this ballot initiative.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's move on to the UK and let's look at the potential seismic shifts anticipated in the British political landscape, as revealed by the latest poll predictions.
Just been handed details of the latest MRP, that is seat-by-seat polling done by YouGov, for what they expect the general election result to be were it to be held about now. I mean, can we get this firmed up, please? Because I can't believe these figures. Is this right? Is this a late April Fool's? I'm going to bring you the details of the latest MRP poll. It's one poll, but my God. So this is the latest poll, MRP, so seat by seat, by YouGov, conducted in the last few weeks, and is separate to the one they conducted in January. The breaking news is this. The Tories are on course for a worse result at a general election than John Major's defeat in 1997. According to this YouGov poll, Labour is poised to take 403 seats, Tories reduced to 155. That therefore equates to a majority for Labour of 154.
We're at a historic juncture with the Conservative Party facing what could be one of its most devastating electoral defeats in recent history. A recent YouGov poll suggested that a stark turnaround from the party's previous strong position in the 2019 election is looking like the Labour Party could secure some 400 seats. With such a large mandate, what could it grant the Labour Party in terms of power to implement substantial policy changes and reforms? So it raises questions about the direction of Sir Keir Starmer and the direction of travel he might take the country, especially if we look at pressing issues like the National Health Service, climate change, and economic policy. Mike Holden, over there in Burnley, are you revved up? Are you excited about a potential Labour landslide and what it might mean for the country?
As you will know, I'm still in Twitter these days. I still call it Twitter these days. I refuse to call it that. But we've spent much of this week trying to organise an election night, all-night party for when it eventually happens, as we're going to cheer out the Tories one by one as they leave the room. And as you say, the latest polling is it's quite horrendous. And you're talking about the YouGov poll that gives them about 155, I think it was. There was another MRP poll observation over the weekend that had the Tories on fewer than 100 seats. They were on 98 seats.
Leah, if these polls are correct and they play out and the swing is uniform across constituencies and seats throughout the country, and they never quite are, but we're looking at potentially 11 cabinet ministers going, the Chancellor's post, Penny Mordaunt, she's history, Grant Shapps, boom, you're gone, Mark Harper, get a new job. What is this even going to do to the Conservative Party if they are reduced to a rump? What Conservative Party is left before we even think about potentially the political latitude that Keir Starmer might have?
I'm afraid to say I'm entirely unsympathetic. They've done this to themselves. They had alternative choices that were presented to them and they chose not to take them. So I repeat, I'm unsympathetic. Where will it leave them? Look, licking their wounds, inevitable wounds, and regrouping in the same way they've struggled to identify what does it mean to be British? What does it mean to live in Britain? They've struggled to identify who are they as a party? What do they stand for? What are they trying to achieve? Why can they not see the disconnect between what they're saying and what people's experience of them are? And that's what I hope will happen. But it all comes, and I say this, I feel like I say this every week, but it comes down to a misunderstanding of what it means and looks like to be a leader and to be an effective leader. And I think people have amnesia. I think people generally don't necessarily have a willingness to learn from lessons of those who have come before them, or lessons that are being taught to them in contemporaneous times. So I think that's my verdict on the Conservatives. And the impact of reform remains to be determined. The potential further defections to that, again, remain to be determined. But ultimately, I think the problem that Labour face with however much excitement people feel about change, however much opportunity is gifted for policy improvements, they are being handed a plate that is effectively empty. There's no money, the resources are limited, the ability to rebuild is limited. The capacity for Keir Starmer to deploy these long-held plans and visions, there is a fetter on that. And I think my enthusiasm for the inevitable change is tempered by a realism that the Labour Party currently cannot allow to affect the public's mind because it will affect voting decisions.
You know what? I genuinely don't know. With all this talk of the economic headwinds being so against any incumbent British government, that they have little room for manoeuvre. We were told the same thing back in 2010, hence austerity was just a given. And then here we are some 14 years later with the economy in tatters because of austerity, because we've so gone down that route that we've stripped away social services and social spending
on our most needy of Britons, so much so that the health service is in tatters, and we have diseases like rickets making a reemergence, as if to say we're living in Dickensian times. I don't know how true this narrative is. I truly believe that with the debacle around water and the amount of raw sewage which has been pumped into our rivers by privatized water companies, the one thing an incumbent Labour government should do is to say, water, we're going to take that back into public ownership. And I think that the round of applause that they would get from the British people would be resounding. Mr. Donoghue, I'm going to come to you because I know that you have a keen eye on British politics. Reform UK is to the right of the Conservative Party, are gaining a lot of traction in the opinion polls. With our first past the post system, they're unlikely to secure any seats, but they could be a strong runner-up in several constituencies. Is this maybe the truest existential threat to the Conservatives, that we could end up with two right-of-centre parties, something which has never happened in British political history that I can think of? And this is where there could be an extra squeeze on the Conservative vote.
So you wouldn't classify UKIP as right-of-centre?
You know what? They absolutely are. But UKIP have now gone... They were a one-issue party, whereas Reform UK, which is fundamentally the son or the daughter or the bastard stepchild of UKIP, they have more than just one platform, and they're not just banging the drum for Brexit. Though I take your point. I take your point completely.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that sunk UKIP is there were a number of individuals that were prominent in the party. They kept making these statements that most of the population just thought were abhorrent. They really didn't reveal themselves. And I don't know that leading off with Lee Anderson is really the ideal representative for reform. And I think the people who had a home in UKIP and felt comfortable in UKIP will find that home and comfort in reform. And I think, again, if the election isn't until October, November, I think that's plenty of time for people to start being turned off by some of the kookier members of reform that'll start showing up.
Mike, I think I don't know whether it's me that said this or Leah or maybe yourself, but it seems that Labour are going to win this election by default, however big the victory ends up being. Is this going to be historically a missed opportunity for a Labour Party, which has been out of power for some 14 years, not to try and radically refashion the country?
Yes, although there are some opinions that such a huge majority, as is now predicted, is not necessarily a good thing, because smaller majority makes better law. So there is chance for debate, there is chance for refinement of policies. And also you've got to bear in mind that Tories, for at least the last 6 months and probably the last 12 months, have spent their entire focus on salting the earth for the next administration, knowing that it's going to be Labour. Money's been withheld. All the things about the post office scandal, there's an infected blood scandal, there are nuclear veterans waiting for compensation payments, and all these things are being held off solely to reduce the pot for the next government. So they may have some big plans, and I hope they do have some big plans, but the capacity to carry out those plans may be limited, as Liz said, by what's coming in terms of what's available in the pot. Also, Keir Starmer spent a long time now aiming for as small a target as he can for Tory attacks. So anything that the Tories think may be a good idea in their voters, Keir Starmer kind of parks his tanks on their lawn. That could end up hogtying them a little bit, at least coming in immediately in the first 100 days of a new administration. Hopefully, given 5 years, there's enough time to turn the ship around, yes.
If we look at the vote share distribution that YouGov made their predictions on, so the projected vote share places Labour at 41%, the Conservatives at 24%, with the Liberal Democrats and Reform UK each at 12%, and the Greens at 7%. Ira, just looking at that as an American, do you look at that and say this is proper 3D politics with a multiplicity of choices for the British electorate? Or do you think it's crazy? Politics only needs to be a duopoly. You know, it's fundamentally left versus right. And the choice then is simple. As an American looking at British politics, or dare I say it, politics from anywhere else from around the world, with a multiplicity of parties, how does it strike you?
Given the situation in American politics now, I'm not sure that I could judge anybody else's country and their politics to be problematic. Look, I think to some extent, I can find situations where, as I believe in this election in the United States, a clear choice between two parties would be preferable than having a proliferation of parties. On the other hand, in other situations, having other choices would be meaningful. So I'm not against it all across the board. I do think that as an outsider, I hope that Labor can put its act together and take advantage of this historic opportunity that they have after a long period of conservative rule and what I believe to be a terrible decision with respect to Brexit.
Talking about decisions to maybe stay in unions or to leave them, I'm going to leave the last question to you here, Leah. The SNP seat prediction and the SNP is the Scottish National Party. They're forecast to lose 29 seats at these current polling figures, and with most of these losses benefiting the Labour Party, which would then re-establish Labour as the largest party in Scotland. Now, obviously, the SNP in Scotland have their own internal issues and the reason why they're unpopular. And then there is the national swing as well. Does this mean that there is still life in the union if the Labour Party, which is a unionist party, is resurgent in Scotland?
Yes.
There you go. You couldn't get a more succinct and clear answer. Who said that we're verbose on this podcast? Nobody, not when you have Leah Brown with you, just to give you a one-word answer. And on that note, good people, it's time for us to wrap things up. So what we do here, very quickly, we go through out the pundits and we say, what have you been up to in the last 7 days? Now, considering you were so short and pithy, Leah Brown, why don't you go first? What have you been up to in the last 7 days and where can people find you online?
Thank you for asking. I appreciate that. I've been up to several things, celebrating Easter, but I've also been writing a book, my second memoir. I have been doing mediations and I've been doing an inordinate amount of crisis management for people with investitures. And I can be found on social media, on Instagram at seenheardspoken. I can be found on X or Twitter at onlyoneLeah. And Broadstairs Consulting is what it is. It can be found everywhere except TikTok.
There you go. Mr. Holden, it's been a long time since you've been on the podcast, sir. So I'm waiting with bated breath about what you've been doing for the last 7 days. And you know what? Considering you probably haven't been on for about a year to 18 months, why don't you tell us what you've been up to in the last year? There you go.
My Thursday nights are taken up with trivia quizzes, as you well know. In fact, I'm presenting tomorrow night, so I've been preparing some of that for this week. But in the recent months, I don't know if you're aware of the situation in Burnley and surrounding areas, but because of the Gaza, or as you were carefully, dispute, the tragedy.
It's called it a war, sir. Let's call it
Because of the
war against the good people of Gaza by the state.
A lot of Labour councillors stepped away from the party as a result of what they saw as Keir Starmer's inaction over Gaza. Well, I've been asked to be a Labour councillor in Burnley, but I've also been diagnosed with high blood pressure. So it's very much a balancing act. I'm working on choosing the right path at the moment. But I'm also living slightly more healthily than I used to. I'm back running again and eating more healthily than I was. And I'm contemplating whether I should stand for the Labour, although I think this time I may have to give it a miss. Although it would be a fairly likely seat, not for my political abilities, but for the fact that there's some big gaping holes around Burnley. That's what I've been doing lately. And I'm supporting Oliver Ryan, who is the Burnley candidate in the upcoming general election.
Just whilst I have you here, Burnley FC are starting to show some level of life at the bottom of the Premier League. Do you still have faith in Vincent Kompany that he can pull Burnley out of the mire?
I'm faith in him. I don't think he's going to pull them out of the mire this time. Last time around, we had a manager called Sean Dyche, who was a brilliant manager. And he brought Burnley up from the Championship to the Premiership. It lasted one season and went straight back down. And then they went back up again. And then they had a good run in the Premiership. And I think that's where we're looking now. I think too late for Burnley this time, I'm afraid. We have turned it around lately. We've been playing much better. We had a great game against Chelsea. But I think it's too late for us this time, got to be honest. But build back better. Come back stronger. You can always find me on, it's still Twitter, and never will be at MikeHolden42.
Ira Shapiro, what have you been up to, sir? Are you writing any more weighty tomes on senators that are about to leave the Senate, or have you cast your magisterial pen in another direction?
Thanks for asking, Royfield. People say, are you writing another book about the Senate? And my answer is always, what is there about trilogy that you don't understand? I've spent too much of my life on the Senate. I'm preparing for the paperback, the updated edition of the book to come out in May. And while any author likes to sell books, I'm principally interested in using it as a platform to talk about the importance of the presidential and the Senate elections. I think the Senate has failed the country catastrophically, and consequently, it's important not only for that Biden defeat Trump, but that we start essentially enlarging a Democratic majority in the Senate, which won't be easy because we're defending more seats than the Republicans are. But I spend a lot of time either writing or speaking about that.
And where can people catch up with you online, sir, to find these missives and to ruminate over your thoughts?
They can find a lot of it at www.irishshapiro.com or at Shapiro Global on Twitter.
Perfect. There you go. Last but definitely not least, Mr. Donoghue, what have you been up to in the last 7 days? And I know this is going to be a corker.
I've been in recovery. Be fun.
Oh, okay. And is recovery going in the right direction?
It's really not. And just to keep this in the theme of the show, I'll try and keep my legs astraddle the pond. First off, on the domestic side of things over here, the person who runs the connections game in the New York Times used emojis instead of words. And I have not been stable since. And again,
Mr. Donoghue, can I just say, I could not do that yesterday. It was like the answer for greens was that lettuce, was it a cabbage? There were too many variables. It was just too hard. It was just too hard. To throw emojis into connections was just a step too far for me. I took one look at it. I threw my phone down on the bed with horror and disgust, picked it up again, and after 20 minutes gave up. I didn't even do one line. I was that bad. I feel your pain and anger.
Yeah, we're simpatico. So then I look to Solace over in the UK, only to find that Question Time is on spring break for some reason. And that's just catastrophic. I don't even know why TV shows are aware of spring break. It's really very odd. So between those two things, it's been rough. Plus, all the stock that I bought in DJT has plummeted significantly. So I'm taking a real bath on that.
There you go. And where can people find you maybe online, sir, if they want to commiserate with your loss of stock on Donald J. Trump?
Yeah, I don't know that I want to be found, but if you must, I'm at tiltedwindmills.com.
There you go. There you go. And I've been, Royfield Brown says at the end of every episode, I've got a real croaky voice today. Left to center politics is right thinking politics. Don't ever forget that. Let's keep up the good fight, and especially to my Labour supporting friends in the UK, whatever the size of this Labour victory, let's not A, take it for granted, and B, let's continue to hold Keir Starmer's feet to the fire regarding continuation of conservative economic policies, fiscal rules, etc. We are still the sixth largest economy in the world, the last time I checked. And for all of the financial headwinds against us, our cities are crying out for infrastructure investment, whether it is Birmingham, Liverpool, Manchester. Our great engines of the economy have been starved of investment. And neoliberalism and continuing the spending patterns of the last 14 years are only going to exacerbate those divisions. So we need a political party and a leader who can have the courage to start to take back into public ownership many of the crown jewels that many former British prime ministers said should never have been sold on. There you go. That's been me, Roy Ford Brown, speaking to Mike Holden, Mike Donahue, Leah Brown, and we had first time on the pod in the panel, Ira Shapiro. Take care. Look after yourselves. Toodle pip. Bye-bye.